I'm Dottie, and I am an alcoholic. And I am a member of the South Bay Survivors Group of Redondo Beach, California. And I brought my own group along. Your program reads Dan. I'm replacing my husband. The only thing I can tell you, I don't know whether I'm any better or any worse, I'm different. I was thinking when he read chapter 3, Pitiful and Incomprehensible Demoralization. I am a little unusual. I reached pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization some 20 years ago, and I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I spent 8.5 years on the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I reached pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. I have a story that I don't mind talking about drunk, but not long ago I realized I really don't like to talk about my first 8.5 years on the program. What I do is kind of destroy apple pie and mother and country and all the things that people believe in. And that was sober. But now we'll start with what happened and what I was like. Okay, what I was like was a mess. I was born in Sioux City, Iowa, and my mother died when I was 3. My grandparents raised me, and I was spoiled rotten. I was 11 years old, and I had my first nervous breakdown. Now, I consider myself very lucky. At 11, that was a long time ago. And age has never bothered me. Before, I might as well tell you, I'm 54 years old. And so it was some 43 years ago, I guess, I had my first nervous breakdown. And as I said, I consider myself lucky because I don't believe there were any psychiatrists in those days. And that was nice. The pediatrician gave me ultraviolet ray treatments in his office, and the masseuse, the Swedish masseuse across the hall, rubbed me down with cold cream and threw me in hot water. And that was the treatment I got for my nervous breakdown. And I'm really glad of that because, you know, today they take kids 11 years old and they fill them full of some kind of either Ritalin or Valium, whichever the doctor decides, and from then on they talk about how bad their mother was and their father. I'm sorry if there's any psychiatrist in the audience. I really don't, you know. I went to one after I was 4.5 years sober, and the only thing was I was lucky there. He told me that I could hear everything I needed to hear in Alcoholics Anonymous, but what I really probably needed was my ears cleared out. So if I quit going to AA, I could quit coming to him. I'm very nervous, in case you can't tell. My baby and then one of my husband's babies are going to talk at the young people's meeting, and all week my baby's been saying, "Aren't you nervous?" I said, "No, I don't get nervous till I get ready to go up there." And so at the table just now, I was telling her, "I am really a nervous wreck." I said, "The only thing I know is it passes, because you couldn't stand up there with the palpitations of the heart and the flutters in the stomach and the rest of it that goes on for an hour, you'd drop dead." So, I'm getting better. I am going to make it. Anyway, I had the nervous breakdown. They didn't do much for me. And I went on to reach about 13. And I, as I said, I was born and raised in Sioux City, Iowa. It's a dry state. So nobody was supposed to drink. So consequently, they really didn't care how old you were. So I started drinking in bars when I was 13 in Sioux City. And I loved to drink. I blacked out, passed out, threw up, and fell in the mud the first time I got drunk, and I couldn't wait to do it again. And, you know, I really liked the smell of it, the taste of it, what it did to me. You know, I just didn't have any more cares. And I got to be about 21, I guess, before I had my next nervous breakdown. I wasn't drinking too much then, I think is what happened. Anyway, I got married when I was 17, and we came to California, and I really loved it, you know. And I never had any problem getting in a bar. I'd been drinking so long, nobody ever asked me for ID. The only problem was that we we started having children. I had, my first two were 11 months and 22 days between the first two and 14 months between the next two. And, you know, so I had three children within a couple of years, and it was really bad news. And that's when I had my second nervous breakdown, was when the third one was born. And they caught me out in the backyard, my neighbors, and I had a butcher knife in my hand, and I was hysterically crying, and they led me over to the one neighbor's house, and they, of course, ran in the house. I hadn't done anything. My kids were all asleep, thank God. And all I was just nuts, and I hadn't done anything. So at that time, I don't know what happened. Nobody suggested psychiatrists. We're talking, you know, 20-some years ago. I went to a GP, and or my husband called a GP. He came, and he suggested that I go to work and board the kids out, that what I needed to do was get away from the kids. And that sounded like a real good idea to me. And that's part of the bad part of my story. You see, I had all those kids, and I didn't know a damn thing about raising kids. And I really didn't like kids. And I know what it was. The kids are were and are too smart for me. You know, they always were too smart for me. So anyway, I drank in those years that we were married and had those kids. But I didn't drink a whole lot because we didn't have a lot of money. And consequently, we just didn't drink a lot. We used to play cards, and they'd go out to get some beer, a couple of quarts of beer, and I'd always ask them to bring me back a Coke. Now, I never thought that was strange then, but I learned later that somehow I knew very early in life that if there was going to be a limit to the booze pass for me, and it was true later on in life, if I was having problems with my husband's, either any of them, then I knew they were only going to give me one drink. I probably wasn't going to have it because I knew what that was going to lead to was one drink and then a big fight so I could get some more by going out. So sometimes I would pass on the one. I believe I was allergic to alcohol from the very beginning. And so anyway, this husband and I, he didn't like to work. He liked to stay home with me. He thought I needed help mopping the floors and doing all those kind of things. So I went out and got a job because shoes were very expensive for those kids. And so we stayed together. My timing is very difficult for me. We probably stayed together 5 or 6 years, maybe 8. I guess about 8 years. And then we separated. And I went to an attorney, and he said, "You can't afford a divorce." And I said, "Well, that's very good, but I sure don't have to live with the SOB." And he said, "Well, no, I can't force you to do that." So we separated, and then I went out to go to work. And I said I'd gone to work when he and I were married, but I'd gone to work in a in a motel on the switchboard. And I worked 7 days on the switchboard. It was in the hands of receivership. I worked 7 days on the switchboard and 2 nights a week in the bar. And those 2 nights were just wonderful. And I loved it, and I could drink then, and I really liked it. But then that job was over, and so I had to go out. And my first job I got was on a switchboard in a music store, and that was fine. The man that hired me liked me, but his girlfriend was my boss, and she came in the office one day, and he was chasing me around the desk. And somehow or another, I didn't have that job by that night. So I went on, and I didn't know what I was going to do. I had been, like I said, 2 nights a week as a cocktail waitress, but I really hadn't done much waitressing, I'll tell you, in that bar. And I remembered that when I had that job, a fellow that used to come in said to me, "If you ever need a job, let me know. I'm a silent partner." And it was really the nicest dinner house in Fresno at the time. And so I was pretty desperate, and I called him one day, and he took me out and introduced me to the guy that owned the place, and they hired me. And there I learned to be a waitress. There was an old fellow that had been 32 years a chef on the Santa Fe Railroad, and he taught me to be a waitress. I remember I went in and I ordered 4 steaks, and I started out with 2 bowls of soup like this. And he said, "Where are you going?" And he started lining that food up on my arm. And I said, "What if I drop it?" He said, "Just come back and get some more, honey." And he taught me to be a waitress. And then I worked 2 nights cocktails, and then I worked 2 nights on a dice table. And I had a good job, and I made good money. And from there, I went on to doing waitress work. And I always worked places that they served booze. And about that time, I had to board my children out. I really just couldn't hack it. Well, the problem was that my neighbors, I lived in a housing project, they objected to my babysitters. They were usually the guys I was going with. And they didn't think that was very nice for me to leave those three little girls. I remember one night they called at work and told me to come home. They called the police. And I got home and walked in, and my children were all asleep, and my boyfriend was asleep, too. And by the time the cops got there, they didn't know what was wrong. But finally, the lady that ran the housing project said, I probably should board them out because the neighbors weren't going to leave me alone. And I thought, oh, a victim again. You know, I spent all of my life being a victim. Even after I got to the program, I thought I was a victim. It took me a long time to understand that thing of I did it to myself because I could never see it. Anyway, I really am kind of dragging this thing out. I really don't talk about that much about that thing, because that was way back there. I went on to work in bars, and I met my second husband, and I got a divorce, I partially had a divorce when we came to Las Vegas and got married. That was an interesting evening. I was sick to my stomach, and I drank cream de menthe all night, and he got drunk. But the interesting part of it was we had to run over and get his old girlfriend who had come up here to go to work, and she went out with us that night. And that was the beginning of a kind of a ridiculous 8 years of marriage. Nice part of it was when we got married, he told me he was sterile, and I was so excited about that. Of course, we'd been married a couple of years, and I was pregnant. And that terrified me. I always forget that I had been to Alcoholics Anonymous before I got pregnant, for about 3 months. I came home one afternoon at 4:30 in the afternoon, and I had left with him about 9 o'clock that night before. And he said to me, call Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, what is Alcoholics? He said, never mind, just call or pack your clothes. Well, by that time, we had been married probably 4 or 5 months. He had picked up all the back support or board bill on my children, and he was paying the rent, and I really didn't want, you know, go back to being by myself. So I called Alcoholics Anonymous, and I stayed around for 3 months, and I raised my hand as an alcoholic, and I learned the words, and I talked in meetings, but I never once really believed down here that I was an alcoholic. And so at the end of 3 months, it was Armistice Day, and we got up in the morning, and we had breakfast, and he went to the icebox and got his normal can of beer, and I went, followed right behind him and got my can of beer. And he said, what are you doing? And I said, well, they told me last night in the meeting, if anything or anybody made me want a drink, I had to get rid of them, and I really don't want to get a divorce. So that started me on 5 more years of drinking. And then, as I said, I got pregnant, and we had a little girl, and I drank that 5 years. But I remember about 3 weeks before the baby was born, I hit a car, and the policeman came up. Oh, I had already had one hit and run. That was it before that. And the one thing that they told me with the hit and run, they broke it down to reckless driving, charged me a $100 fine. But the one thing that they told me then was, don't move a car after you have an accident. So here I am about 8 months and 1 week pregnant, and I'm stopped dead in the middle of the street. I've hit a car. The policeman came over. It was a fellow I used to know. I had dated, and he said, move the car. And I said, no. He said, move the car. I said, no, I can't move the car. I just hit a car. I can't. He opened the car door, and he said, oh, my God, drunk and pregnant. And I said, yeah. So anyway, he got the kids that were in the other car to take me home. Well, they only got around the corner. We passed one of my favorite bars. I said, stop here. They said, but this isn't where you... I said, but I have to have a drink. I'm so nervous. So I don't remember getting home that night. I don't think I did. But so that... They always say, you know, if it hasn't happened to you, always add the word yet. And I didn't do that. I hadn't. But that was about all that happened in that 5 years. But at the end of that 5 years, I came to again, which I did often. Came to out of a blackout at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I was screaming, turn it off. The music on the stereo was Manhattan Towers. Now, I've been sober 20 years, and I still don't know why I hate that music, but I don't like it. And I'm sure someday some light is going to go on, and I'm going to say, oh, because I will probably remember Maybe I've remembered a lot of things over the years. I like the thing about Alcoholics Anonymous, the thing that God never gives us more in one day than we can handle. And God also doesn't give us more of our past, I don't believe, than we can handle at a time. And I've been grateful for that because my past was pretty rough. And then I came to AA and it got rougher. So anyhow, I called Alcoholics. I came out of this blackout. The fellow I was with, I asked him if he had anything to drink. He said he couldn't imagine bringing me home without something to drink. And he poured me a water glass full of whiskey. And I drank that, and I have not had a drink since. My husband had left me. I was pregnant 3 months again, and he had been gone about a month. I got home that morning, and I called him, and I said, "Please help me." And he said, "I can't even help myself. I don't know how you expect me to help you." And he said, "I'll be over at 9 o'clock. And with that, he hung up, and I dialed back, and he had taken the phone off the hook. Well, I don't remember trying to lie down or anything. I know I paced the floor and wandered around and was pretty miserable. And often I hear when people say, "You don't need to call the alcoholic bad names. They've already called themselves bad enough names," right? Well, he walked in at 9 o'clock in the morning, and what he said to me was, "If you think you make a pretty sight sitting on a bar stool pregnant," he said, "you're sadly mistaken." He said, "You look like a slut." Now, I have to tell you that I had never called myself a slut. I had called myself a lush, which I thought was pretty nice. And I used to sit always in front of the mirror at the bar, and I all got prettier and prettier and prettier the longer I sat there. So I had never called myself any kind of rotten name like that. But I'll tell you, that man got my attention. And it was not necessary for me to drink since then. And I was very grateful to him. Luckily, I was able to make my amends to him before he died, and that I'm always grateful for. I was able to tell him I loved him very much, and because my present husband taught me that to love someone is to wish the best for them, and I was able to tell him I loved him, and I'm very grateful for that. I went on, and he came back just a month before the baby was born, and I was going to meetings every night, and it was really wonderful. When I had the baby, I came back to meetings after a week, and they perched me up on a big, you know, chair with a pillow, and I had a home group right away when I came to AA. And these people loved me, and they did their best. I often say I was a screaming atheist for my first 8.5 years on the program. I didn't start to scream atheism for about 3 years. I tried to act as if, I guess, my first couple of years. I didn't believe, but I tried to act as if. And we had a good home group. I got sober in Fresno. I don't know whether I ever said where I got sober and lived all these crazy years. But it was Fresno, California. And they were nice people, and they really did love me, and they tried to help me. The only thing I think that maybe, you know, maybe, oh, I don't know, who knows, I probably would have fought with the broads, too. There were only 3 women sober when I got sober, and they went to a meeting once a month whether they needed it or not. So consequently, I was thrown in with all men, and my whole life had been thrown in with men, and I had been a con, and they had been cons, and you know, we just sit along, they'd always walk along and say, "Isn't she cute?" You know, didn't make any difference. I was throwing my pablum on the floor every 5 minutes. They acted like I was cute. And by the time the women started coming in, I had more time, and so consequently, I couldn't hear what they had to say. And I today, I step on a lot of toes a lot of times when I talk, because I believe that women work with women and men work with men. And I have seen for myself. That's my own experience. I've been sober about 3 years or 3.5. We decided to come to a parting of the ways. I was sure that life had more to offer to me than this man who, he was a heavy drinker. I don't believe he was an alcoholic. But he was 34 years old when we got married, and he'd never been married. He'd lived at home with his mother. And we'd been married we'd only been married a week, because we went away and got married on the weekend and came back, and I guess we hadn't even been married a week. We went away on Friday, came back, and Monday morning at 4 o'clock in the morning, the radio started playing and the lights started flashing, and the alarm went off. And I jumped. I said, "What is going on?" He said, "Well, I have to go help my mother with the washing." And And I thought, oh, my God, what did I get into now? This is the one I sure do. I skip around a lot. The reason, one of the reasons I skip around a lot was I was sober over 10 years before I was ever asked to talk from a podium. They don't ask atheists to talk from podiums in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so that's how I never have got my story together, you know. So I jump around a lot. But anyway, it was a pretty sad day in Black Rock because he came home about 30 minutes later. She wouldn't allow him to help him with her with the wash because he'd married me. And she used to call our house, I guess up till about a year before we finally got a divorce. She'd call the house, and if I answered, she'd hang up. And finally, I'd been sober two years, I guess, and I said, that's it. I said, next time she does that, we're going to, you know, I'm going to call her back, and we're going to have it. And so she never called again. She called him at the office, and that was fine. But anyway, I don't know. Where am I? I left him. That's what I did. I left him, didn't I? and I went on to, I went to work, and I went back to waitress work. It was the only thing I'd ever done, and I got a good job. I went back to a place that I'd worked when I drank, and I told my boss that I had joined AA, and she was delighted, and I worked there about 3 years. And during that time, there was a little fellow who had been sober about the same amount of time I had. Now, he'd never been married either, and he was 10 years younger than me. And I thought, well, he's, you know, we kind of had known each other all this time. But when I left my husband, we started to date and go together, and we went together about 8 or 9 months. And then he came and said he was going to go to Europe, and I was highly insulted. He didn't ask me to go with him. He went to Europe, and when he came back, he said to me, I have something to tell you. He said, I'm not an alcoholic anymore. I've become a social drinker. I said, oh, that's nice. So we went together probably another month and a half, I guess, and he was quite a social drinker. I went down to Visalia where he lived one night to the ranch, and he wasn't there, but his car was in the barn, and so I looked all around. I couldn't find him, so I went in and went to bed, and about an hour later, he comes staggering through the door, and he's covered with this red all down the front, and I thought, oh, my God, somebody stuck a knife in him. And I got a little closer, and what it was he'd thrown up wine all over him, and had been laying out in the orange orchard. So, needless to say, we didn't go together much longer. It's so strange to me that I couldn't come to believe in God, because, you know, God saved me from so many things. You know, if that man had ever asked me to marry him, I would have moved down on that ranch, and I would have had to drink with him because I wouldn't have dared let him go into town alone. But he didn't. While we were going together was when I first really learned the words about atheism and started reading Ingersoll and psychology and a lot of other things. And I really became what today I would call a pseudo-intellectual. I really thought I was smart. And there were what they called the unholy six. And there was he and I and another couple, a guy and a gal, and another married couple, a guy and a gal. That's nice. Yeah, right. Three couples. Well, I guess that's not so strange today. There's different kinds of couples openly today. And so anyway, but there we were. And we got into this thing of studying and talking, and we were so impressed with ourselves. That was when tape recorders, I guess they'd had them for a long time, but the little ones came out, and we had a tape recorder. We used to tape about an hour of our conversation, and then we'd play it back. We thought we were so smart, you know. We were really clever, and we were really impressed with ourselves. And another thing, I'm really grateful. About a year or two later, a year after we broke up, I guess, the fellow that I went with was killed. He ran into the back end of a car, stopped at a stoplight, doing 60 miles an hour, drunk. And he died before they got him to the hospital. The other couple had 12 or 13 years of sobriety and got drunk right after we broke up our little clique. And it took them years to get back. I saw the gal in Fresno. I think she has 2 years of sobriety. And she says her husband, her ex-husband now is sober again. The other couple went to Eugene, Oregon, and the last time I saw him, He was coming through Fresno on a running drunk. She at that time was still sober. I don't know whether she is or not, but that's about average for alcoholics. If there are six of them, two of them will go out and drink and die. Two of them may drink again and come back to the program, and two will maybe stay. And that's really what happened, and I'm so grateful that I am one of the statistics that stayed, because I had every reason in the world not to be standing here sober tonight, because I went on again to run roughshod through people's lives. You see, I've done it again. My friends will all laugh. I always leave this part out until I have to bring it in, because it is one of the most important parts of my story. My husband and I had been divorced probably 6 months, and he had me followed with this young guy I was going with, and he called me up one day and he said, I have a list of every motel you've stayed in, and hours you're in and hours you're not in at the house, and he said, I want custody of the children. And I called my attorney, and he said, well, you know, did you take the kids to the motel with you? And I said, no. But he said, well, we can fight him. And I said, well, I'll talk to you later. You see, because I did not want to fight him. I had said a couple of times since we had divorced that what I'd really like to do was pack all those kids' clothes and take them over and put them on his porch with the kids and run like hell. Go to New York, China, anywhere, just to get away. I could not cope. By that time, my older girls were teenagers. They were probably, I know what they were. They were 15, 16, and 17, and then I had the two little ones, and it was terrible. You know, I'd come home from work. The big kids have the TV and the radio on. The little ones were playing their record player, and they all five of them fighting. And I could not cope. So I was taking a bath one night, and one of my older girls came in. She said, Mother, why don't you let us go live with Daddy? He wants us, and it wouldn't be much different. We take care of the kids now, and it would be easier on you. And it was like somebody lifted a monkey off my back. I got out of the tub, went and called him, and I let him have the children back. Anyway, I tried one time to take him back. I guess about a year after I'd let him have them, he went to get married, and he asked me if I wouldn't take him, and I did, and I was able to keep him 2 weeks. And it just didn't work. I brought the kids home from nursery school after work one day, and my little one was about, oh, I don't know, 2.5 or 3, I guess. And from the time she got in the car till she started to cry, and by 7:30 at night, I got off at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, so from 3:30 to 7:30, that kid did nothing but scream. I walked the floor with her. I couldn't do anything. And the other one was about 5, and she was running around saying, what's the matter with the baby? Finally, I called a friend of mine in Alcoholics Anonymous, and she came to the door, and I had this baby in my arms, and I handed her to her, and the baby was asleep before she could walk across the room to the chair. So I called him, and I knew that, you know, and he had married, and he said I could come to the back door, and he talked to me, and I told him he had to take the kids, and he said, do you need more money? And I said, all the money in the world wouldn't do it. I can't handle it. And that's, as I said, part of the thing. You see, nobody understood that. Not even the people in Alcoholics Anonymous understand giving up your children. I guess that's the thing, you know, it's even better when the court takes them away from you when you, you know, because you can always say they did it to me, I was a victim again. But when you have to stand up and say you gave them away, I remember I said, I was really uptight one night in a meeting, somebody had said some rotten thing to me. And I said, well, you know, I said, it's all right, I said, you know, if I'd have slit their throat or drowned them or something, they'd have put me in the nut house, but I gave them up. And what they didn't realize was I never finished that. I gave them up before I did that, because I don't know what would have happened. And it was about 2 months later when I gave them up. And it was a hard thing. You know, several girls have come to me and said, you know, what about giving up? I think I'm going to give up my kids. And I said, man, you know, that's all very nice, but it's not just today. You better think about it a little bit, because it took a long time. I used to walk around very smartly after I came to live with my husband, my present husband, and I used to say, well, I'm all over it. It doesn't make any difference. Everything's fine, you know. One time he said, I don't know why she talks about it all the time if it's all so fine. And then I realized it takes a long time. I think today I'm over it. I think it's pretty all right, but my girls are, my little ones are grown now. My almost 20-year-old called me last night, was talking about to be sure and tell Dan how much she loved him and how good he'd been to her. And he hasn't seen a lot of her, but he was always very kind and very good, and she appreciated it, that. And I really appreciated her call, and because it seems like nobody's mad at me anymore, and I'm not mad at them anymore. But it took a lot of years. Anyway, to go on, when this young man and I broke up, you would think maybe, you know, I think younger men were probably not it, but what happened was, I didn't tell you one other thing about that atheism thing that was really nice. They kicked us out of the club in Fresno, and we were so irate that we got a lawyer, and we went to fight it. And, of course, they were pretty smart. What they did was they closed down the club for 3 days and changed all the bylaws. So I marched out of the club in Fresno and never entered its doors for 3 years. And that was probably a good thing for me. I didn't have a lot of that social thing going for that I didn't need at that time. I went to meetings. And the people in Alcoholics Anonymous used to tell me I would either come to believe in God or I would drink. And I would sneer and go on with my smart action. And I had a bad mouth. I had a very, very bad mouth. Hopefully tonight we'll get through without hearing any of my bad mouth, because it is not gone. Believe me, my babies can tell you it's not gone. I do try to control it at the podium, because it occurred to me, I used to talk rotten at the podium, and it occurred to me that what I was doing was turning people off, and that was not what I was here to do. It took me a long time to get that through my head. What I was here to do was to share with you what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me. And if I cut you off in the very beginning, then I don't have a chance to show you that it will work for anyone that is an alcoholic of my type and does not want to drink again. And you can have a good life. Anyway, where was I? I get certainly turned around. I had then started, by that time I was going back into the club, and I walked in one day, and here is this 6'5", brown-eyed, brown hair, just a doll. He was pretty shaky and pretty sick and pretty young. Anyway, we started going together, and wasn't long he was drunk again, and they caught him, the police caught him. He had he and another drunk alcoholic had pulled a 1,000-pound air conditioner off of a house, and they had a car to move it in. Now, that's a lot of... And, of course, it took a long time, so by the time they got it off, the police came, and away they went. And so while he was in jail, they had just started court programs, so I used to go down and hold hands with him on Thursday nights. He only did a month in the county jail because everybody in the program went down and said he's really a lovely boy and he'll be all right. And so they gave him a month, and we wrote lovely letters to each other, and he asked me to marry him. Now, I said young, didn't I? When we went to get our marriage license, I wasn't very smart. You can go and get a marriage license in California and say over 21. But what I put down was 38, and what he put down was 22. Now, 16 years doesn't sound so bad, you know, but 38 and 22. Anyway, his mother just loved me because she gave him to me. She could quit being mother, and I could be mother. And we spent the next 3.5 years just a mess. He drunk me, him drunk, him sober, him drunk me, him sober. And finally, we decided to get a divorce. And so in July, we got interlocutory decree of divorce, and then December at Christmas time he wanted to come home, and he did, and that was the longest period he was ever sober. But the 28th day of May he got drunk again, and so I said that's it. And in July I picked up the final papers of divorce, and about 3 days later he married a 21-year-old girl, and I went crazy. Now you see, I did not want this jerk. I didn't want anything he had. But I sure didn't want anybody else to have him, and especially some young girl. You know, that talk about woman scorn, that's pretty bad. You know, I was 40-something then, 41, I guess, or something. And they told me life began at 40, and I thought, well, hell, I've already lost it, you know. Been married 3 times and made a mess of it. But that was, when I went crazy, that's the best thing that ever happened to me. Because you see what happened, I couldn't work. I was so crazy, I had to take my vacation. Now, waitresses never take vacation because all they got was their salary, and that was $35 a week, and they don't throw your tips in on that vacation time. But I was so crazy, I couldn't work. And I've surrendered to the program. I didn't surrender to the program. I surrendered to alcohol when I came here in 1957. And 8 or 8 and a half years later, somewhere around in there, I surrendered to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I again had to call for help. And I called a friend of mine who was then sober a year. He had been around the program 20 years, but he was sober at that time a year. And I don't know why I called him, but I did. And he came to my house. And what he told me that night, the only one thing I remember, is he said, "You must let go." And he said, "I am not going to tell you and let God." He said, "I do not want to fight with you." But he said, "If you let go, maybe someday you can let God." And with that, I got my first prayer, I guess, that night, because I asked him. I said, "I don't know anything." I said, "But you tell me to let go. How do you do that?" And he said, "Well, you find something to say. Every time you think about Jimmy and this gal, what was her name? Susie." God, I've had a lot of Susies in my life. But anyway, then I had to think of something or say something. And as I said, I had a garbage mouth. So I had two words to say, and you all know what they are. They're two of the worst ones. But it worked. The first day I probably said it 1,000 times. The next day I probably said it 998. And pretty soon it became all right. I could go back to work, and I could handle my job, and I could do some things. And then I decided that I had always wanted to make my fortune in Nevada, so I came to Reno, and what I didn't realize was that everybody puts their change in the slot machine. They don't leave it on the table for the waitress, and I made a lot more. I think they do now. Times have changed. I think if I have to go back to work, which, you know, possibly, I look around at tables and I think, well, the money's pretty good today. At least in our crowd it is, you know. We get up and we're... I think when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous and was a waitress, I had to train AAs to tip. I don't know what... They were the cheapest SOBs in those days. You know, goddamn, 15 cents for a four-course meal. And I'd rant and rave and scream and then embarrass them and they'd, you know. But I trained a lot of people in Fresno to tip. And, well, I thought if they were going to become my customers, I didn't want to wait on them for nothing. So, I don't know why. I can get way off tonight with goofy things. But that's all right. I'm not supposed to be here anyway. Anyway, I went to Reno, and I stayed about 2.5 months, and I was really homesick and wanted to go home, and I went home to Fresno. And it was like, I forgot to tell you, I moved to Redwood City one time, stayed 13 days, and got homesick for Fresno. Now, I got to tell you, when I was in Fresno. I hated everybody in AA and all that. But anyway, in the meantime, that 2.5 months while I was in Reno, I had come to believe in a power greater than myself. Now, I don't know how... it says in our ABCs, God could and would have thought, and I obviously had made some kind of a search in that couple of months. I believe today what had happened, that in my atheism, I had thrown away everything that I could not believe about God. Now, my husband did this while he was in jail. He had thrown away everything. That's what his sponsor told him to do, and he did it over probably a three-week period. And it had taken me probably 8 years to throw away everything that I could not believe about God. And at the end of that 8 years, when I was looking for something, there was something still there. And that something is there tonight. I can't explain it to you. We have a rule in our group that if somebody wants to talk either about meditation or God, we say, pass, hold it, because what it winds up with is, can you top this to me? And because to me... God, as I understand God, is a very private matter. It is what gave me my life. I had no life going for me. I was just sober when I came to believe. And on the way down from Reno into, you know, down the hill there, going into Fresno, I said that thing, if I get a good job with good days off and good money, everything will be all right. I wasn't in Fresno 24 hours. And I got a job from 12 noon till 8 o'clock at night. I made between $12 and $18 a day in tips. And I had Saturday and Sunday off. But I also learned the best lesson of my life. I did not ask for a good boss, and he was an SOB. I lasted 6 weeks. I had to quit the job because he didn't like my not drinking with his customers. But that taught me, as I said, the best lesson. Today, the word want is not in my vocabulary. From that day to this, if I think I want, I raise my hand and say, please, don't give it to me. It'll be all screwed up because I never can cover all the bets. And that was really a lesson to me because all my life, when I look back on it, I had always gotten everything I wanted. But I had always asked for something screwy or, not enough or not the right thing or, not what I needed, certainly. Although a lot of times I got what I needed, I also got what I deserved a lot of times. But I don't know. From there, I could start into what is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 steps. I was into getting ready to do my inventory. When I went, I had been sick for a couple of weeks and really sick. And I had pleurisy and I couldn't go to work. And I went to a meeting, my home group meeting. It was then moved to Friday night. My Monday night home group had long been disbanded and I had moved to a Friday night home group. And we always went out to eat on Friday night. And nobody in that meeting was going to go eat. And I was really upset. I had been sick, been a long time since I'd been around anybody, and I was really upset. So I started home in my car, and, I don't think God talks to me, but I kept thinking, no, I'm not going to go home. I'm going to go to the club. And I kept thinking, no, I'm not going to go to the club. There's never anything going on in the club at this time of night. Anyway, I went to the club. And I walked in, ran in, stood over the floor furnace, and I looked over in the chair, and here sits this guy. And he said, hi, and I said, hi, and he said, you're Dottie, aren't you? And I said, yeah, you're Dan. And he said, yeah. And I'd known him. He'd been in and out of Fresno as a salesman, and I knew who he was. I hated him. He every chance he got this young kid I was married to aside and tried to talk to him about God, and then I'd have to stay awake till 4 o'clock in the morning straightening his act out. And one night I'd walked up to him after a meeting, said something. He said, oh, that's all right, honey. Everybody has to go through that to get here. And I said, you egotistical SOB, what have you got anybody wants? Well, 6 years later, there he sat. And so we went out to eat, and I told him all about having come to believe in God, and he told me all about having left his wife and his kids, and I told him all about Jimmy was married again, and he said, how much sanity have you got? And I said, what do you mean? He said, how would you like to go to Sacramento in the morning? And I said, well, that sounds like a nice idea, and went back to the car, and he said, well, your place or mine? And I said, if you're going to argue, well, you know that old story. Anyway, we went to Sacramento, and we came back on Monday, and he stayed an extra 4 or 5 days in Fresno, and he went back to Riverside. And he wrote, and I wrote, and he called a couple of times, and he came back the next month on business and stayed 4 or 5 days, and then we started talking about that. Was in March, and it was in February. And first part of March he was back, and he said, talking about June, maybe I'd move to Riverside. And that sounded good, and the 16th of March, I was working. I had a lousy job. I, didn't like to work nights anyway, and I had it 2 in the afternoon to 10 at night, and there wasn't enough business for one waitress, and they'd hired another one and given her the dining room, right? So here I am in this coffee shop where somebody came in once an hour. And I went in finally about 8 o'clock at night, and I clocked out, went up to my room. I was living at the motel, too, and called my boss and said I'd quit. And about that time, the phone rang, and it was Dan. And he said, what are you doing? And I said, well, I just quit my job. And he said, well, what do you want to do? And I said, well, you know what I'd like to do. He said, well, what are you waiting for? He said, pack your stuff. You want me to come get you, or do you think your car will make it? And I said, oh, I think my car will make it. So at 1:30 in the morning, my daughter and I are hauling boxes over to her garage that I can't pack in that little Falcon of mine. And the 17th of March, what was that? I don't know. It's been 10 and a half years ago anyway. I moved to Riverside. And we had a little... I don't know, any of you live in Riverside, and a few of you do. There's a mission in there, and it's been there for years and years. And across the 6th Street, they have a little ramp. And like a, I don't know, what do I want to say? It's across the street, and it leads from there to the what used to be the help's quarters in the olden days. And we got a little shotgun hotel room, two hotel rooms with a bathroom in between for $40 a month, and Dan had just started his own vitamin business on $75. And we moved in there at $40 a month, and we never knew whether we were going to eat or not that day unless he sold a bottle of vitamins or we picked up a little something out of the mail. And that was the gassiest year. You know, it was really great. And we were in love, and AA was great in Riverside, and we really, really had a good time. And the vitamin business went a little bit better, and I got round to taking my steps in that year. I went to take my fourth step, and I'm telling him something about it says in the big book, and he said, no, it doesn't say anything like that in the big book. And we went home, and sure enough, it said it in the big book, but except that it was printed material, it was the A-Corps guide to the inventory. So we tossed that, and I took the inventory out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous the way I did all of my steps. And so I'm moving along in my steps, and we're getting along fine, and the vitamin business is going pretty good, and we decide we need to move to Los Angeles, and we still aren't too great on money. We're, well, we couldn't afford to pay $165 a month rent because we couldn't get that much together, so we went and rented a motel apartment for $42.50 a week. Now, that's the most expensive closet in those days that anybody had, because we traveled about 2 weeks a month, and it went on. It went on from there. And then we moved into a trailer, and that's the thing that happened in that that motel apartment was they furnished us with a TV, though. And so we didn't hardly know anybody, but we'd met a few people. And so when we got ready to move into the trailer, we got a couple, three guys that we'd met in AA, and we moved to the trailer. And Dan said, you think we need a TV? I said, no, man, we need to meet some people, you know. We're both of us glued to this television from 10:30 at night. So with that, we moved into the trailer, and about that time, I got two babies. One asked me to be her sponsor, and the other one asked both of us to be her sponsor. And he was her sponsor for the first year. She's sitting down here, and then I got to be her sponsor. When I finally said, that's enough. We were doing it together. It was fine. But I don't know. We stayed 6 months in the motel apartment. We stayed 6 months in the trailer. And then we moved into a house. And my husband sobered up in Chicago. And he sobered up at house meetings. And he had always wanted to have a home meeting. So when we got the house, I guess we'd been in the house about 2 weeks when we started a Thursday night meeting. And there were about seven of us, as I remember, at the first meeting, maybe less. I don't really remember. And that meeting now, 8.5 years later, it's at least 50 people, and you better get there early. And if you don't like to sit in the middle of the floor, then you better find somebody to back up against so you can lean. And we went on to, I then, you know, got into what the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is about. You know, it says in the book, when all else fails, work with another alcoholic. And I realized how little I had ever had to share with any alcoholic until I had worked the steps. And after that, it just went from there. And I don't know. From that meeting, we have a Tuesday night women's meeting in a home. We have a Saturday night mixed meeting in a home. We have a Monday night stag at a church. We have a Sunday night meeting that is really the name of our group, a four-speaker meeting in Redondo Beach, and that was also patterned after meetings in Chicago that my husband had liked. We get people from another group to come and talk to us. And, you know, we've had weddings in our house, and we've just had a marvelous time. Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, really, really gave me a life. I so often think of that first 8.5 years, you know, I could have missed this whole trip. I was just one drink away from a drunk, and I was awful close a lot of times because I had nothing to hang on to. And, you know, I heard someone say in a meeting one night that I'm a long way from a drink. And tonight I am a long way from a drink, I feel. I'm 20 years. I'm the 12 steps. I'm a power greater than myself and a lot of people away from a drink. It would take me quite a while to get goofy enough to take a drink. But I also would like to share with you that a week ago, I guess it was last week. Monday we went to Mexico and we came back on Tuesday. And on Wednesday we left Torrance to go to head for Lake Tahoe. As I said, my husband's been sick. And we stopped in Fresno. We both have a baby in Fresno, a couple. And we stopped there Wednesday night. And they have the telephone rings in their house on Wednesday night. So we didn't go to a meeting that night. And we went on up to Tahoe Thursday. And then two of our babies came up from San Francisco and spent the weekend with us in Tahoe. And I don't know, you know, I never once thought. I had looked up meetings in Tahoe, and I had thought maybe Friday or Saturday night we'd go to a meeting. And I don't know, it passed, I never thought of it. And we came back Sunday, and we stayed again in Fresno, and that's the night they go at the show. And I was crazy by the time we got to Fresno. And I jumped in the car and went to the drive-in movie with them. They pack a lunch. It's really fun to go to the movies with them. We had popcorn and pizza and Cokes, and I don't know, we just had a marvelous time. And then we got in the car Monday and drove home, and Monday night I don't go to a meeting, right? I never go to a meeting on Monday night. That's the men's stag. I stay home. My husband was sitting in the chair, and the fellows came in. Are you going to the meeting? He said, no. He said, I think my right arm could go to the meeting, but I don't think my right arm could take the rest of me. So he didn't go, and I didn't even think of it. By Tuesday night, I walked into our women's meeting, and I was crazy. I was really just crazy. I was like, you know, and talking really goofy. And it took me half of the meeting to realize I had been 1 week without a meeting. Now, I got to tell you, I cannot, at 20 years, go 1 week without a meeting and stay where I need to be, in touch, in contact. You know, I get out there, and particularly not around my you know, my peers, you know, my babies who, you know, the little one from San Francisco and I were riding down the street one day. She'd been sober a little while, and I don't know, probably a couple of years, and I was having a really bad day. And she finally looked at me. She said, why don't you read the book? I said, oh, yeah. A couple of weeks ago, the baby that's going to talk tonight, I was going on and on about something. She said, gee, you know, that's not one day at a time. You know, it's all right for me to say that, but I'm grateful for that. Without it, you know, without the reminder, without the people. Another thing that we did, our group, we did, I don't know. I had there was a gal in our group, and she called me. She'd been sober a year, and she said to me, how come we're always mad and always yelling about the fact that all you can get after 9 o'clock at night in Los Angeles is a recording that says if you have a drinking problem, call back at 9 in the morning. And how come we don't start our own answering service? I said, well, you know, I don't know. And because she had called the police department at 10:30 at night in Redondo Beach, and they had happened to turn her on to AA, turned her on to the club, and that's how she'd gotten sober. So I thought and thought and thought, and I thought, oh, well, I said, I'll tell you why we can't do it now. I said, the telephone book just came out, and so we'll have to wait a year. And I thought, you know, till we can get listed in the phone book. She said, what's wrong with calling the police departments and giving them the number, and maybe the churches, and maybe information would give them the number if they call? Most drunks can't dial a phone number anyway. Oh, God. Well, I was trapped. So what we did, we started a 24-hour answering service. Now, I have to tell you that we were not too well received. We had to go down and appear at central office and meeting, and finally, after we'd been going about 6 months, they took our ad out of the newspaper, and they said we weren't Alcoholics Anonymous, and we didn't, you know, I don't know whatever happened to one, you know, one alcoholic talking. Anyway, finally, after about 6 months, my husband and another member went down to meet the two guys who had gotten the ad taken out of the paper in the newspaper office, And the man who was head of circulation said, we are putting the ad back in the paper and it will not come out again. And so we've had the answering service, I guess, about four and a half years. And now it's really nice because we have a lot of people that don't belong to our group that are excited about working on our answering service. We are 24 hours a day in the South Bay area. And it's just been really great. And it was so marvelous because the babies that we had had before, a lot of them had 4 and 5 years sobriety and never had made a 12-step call. Because, you know, they just didn't get them. And now, you know, they're all active and they're all taking babies, you know, picking them up and taking them. And we got another thing in our group. You know, if you got a couch, you bring the drunk home, you know. That's how we got sober. That's how my husband and I got sober was, you know, we don't let George do it. We bring him home. We let him throw up. I have to have somebody around to help me when they do that, though, because I throw up with them. So, you know, I always drag a strong stomach one along with me. And actually, it's been a while since we've had one because there are so many young people and newer people, rather, doing it. So we get to kind of play grandma and grandpa a lot, and that's nice. I think I even have one great-grandbaby now. You know, one of my baby's baby has a baby. And it's really great. You know, my life is outstanding. We lived together from 10 and a half years ago until April of this year. Dan, I came in one night. He was in the front bedroom, and he was looking through some papers. I said, what are you doing? And he said, well, I'm looking up some papers, he said. I said, what for? He said, well, I thought I might ask somebody to marry me next time we went to Las Vegas. And I turned around, walked out. I came back. I said, are you kidding? And he said, no. So we came up, and the same couple from San Francisco flew up and stood up with us April 6th, and we got married here. We got home, and God, did they throw a reception for us. Dan had been to talk that night, and we had a lot of trouble with the car on the way back, but there they were, all of them, including Big Daddy. He's got 33 years? Yeah, he's been going to conventions with us the last 4 or 5 years, and even he's waiting up at midnight to celebrate the reception, and a lot of people were there, and it was really great, and I thought this is just marvelous, and Sunday, the kids who are going to talk tonight called and said, can you come for dinner? And my husband ain't great about going out to dinner anyway. You know, at people's houses, he's a vegetarian. He's always afraid they're going to slip him something. So anyway, he said, sure, we'll come to dinner. And so we walk up. And I thought strange she had the curtains down the apartment. Usually she doesn't have the drapes down when we're coming for dinner. But anyway, I didn't think too much. Open the door, and here's every bride in the group sitting in there hollering, surprise. They're going to give me a shower on top of everything else. Well, I won't tell you what I said. I threw my purse in the middle of the floor and said some rotten thing, because I said I was going to clean it up. But it sounded normal to them, and they all laughed, and we had a marvelous time. So, I don't know. Life for me is outstanding. If you're new and you want to be sober, go to meetings. Don't drink. And, you know, eventually, get a sponsor. Get one that you know. You know, if you have to, go up and say, have you worked the steps? Don't pick some flake that's like I was for 8 years wandering around, you know, being cool. Go up. You know, it's your life. It is your life. And you go up, and if somebody appeals to you, you say to them, have you worked the steps? And if they say yes, then it's probably a good bet that they'll be able to be your sponsor, and they'll be able to help you through the steps, and they'll be able to help you to a life like I have tonight, and like there are lots and lots of people in this room have tonight, because life can be beautiful in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thank you all very much.